Hey guys, I'm comedian Rudy Povich, and when I'm not working behind the scenes of today's biggest podcast like The Adam Carolla Show and Adam Ray's About Last Night, I'm doing my own, A Long Walk to Cleveland. Find new episodes Monday through Friday on the iHeart app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you upload your podcast.
Las Vegas, I'll be inside you this Thursday through Sunday, July 7th through the 10th at the Tropicana Casino, the Laugh Factory inside the Trop, Vegas, July 7th through the 10th. July 20th, 21st, and 22nd, I'll be on the road with Sal Volcano from Impractical Jokers in Portland, Seattle, Vancouver, July 20th through the 22nd. Tickets at salvolcanocomedy.com. July 29th through the 31st, I'll be in La Jolla at the Comedy Store, La Jolla, San Diego. Come out and see me July 29th through the 31st. August 5th and 6th in Boston, Massachusetts at Laugh Boston. Then August 7th at Portsmouth, Massachusetts, the Music Hall in Portsmouth, Massachusetts. Come out and see me. August 12th through the 13th, I'll be back in Seattle at Laugh's Comedy Club. Come out and see me there. Hometown shows. All these tickets at AdamRayComedy.com. Of course, ALN Podcast on Instagram and Twitter, Adam Ray Comedy on Instagram and Twitter. Check out my specials live from San Francisco and live from Madison on my YouTube channel right now. And of course, subscribe to the podcast on YouTube, Spotify, iTunes. Rate and subscribe to the podcast. It helps us climb the charts. And enjoy today's episode with Grammy winner, music producer, writer. He's worked with Celine Dion, Michael Jackson, Lady Gaga, Barbra Streisand, and wrote All I Want for Christmas Is You with Mariah Carey, the one and only Walter A.
Hey, it's Herbert. And you're listening to the About Last Night podcast, you slippery little son of a bitch. I had to testify in a Michael Bolton trial.
Oh, are you going? Can you talk about this? Can you?
Yeah.
Oh, man. Mo?
Yeah, you're good. Whatever you want.
No, that was a doozy, man.
Yeah, I'd say testifying in anything Bolton related is a big doozy. First of all, you know Michael because of how?
Well, Michael and I started working together in 1989. It was like my first gig as a producer, like, yeah, literally, because I was working for another producer, and then Michael came, and he was at Columbia Records, so he and I hit it off really well, and we started to write and work on his album called Time, Love, and Tenderness. However,
Time, Love, and Tenderness.
And on that album, he and a gentleman named Andy Goldmark wrote one of the big singles called Love is a Wonderful Thing.
Mm-hmm.
Love is a wonderful thing. Anyway, so, you know, I produced it like an old kind of an R&B, you know, it's like a Motown-y kind of thing.
Yeah.
So anyway, album came out. It was like hugely successful. I mean, unbelievable.
Oh, Bolton was king of the world there for a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, he won a Grammy that year.
Wow.
For When a Man Loves a Woman. So it was a really big deal album, and, you know, a lot of really successful singles. And suddenly, man, the Isley Brothers filed a copyright infringement against him and Andy.
For which tune?
For a song that they did in like 1962 or 64.
Oh, so nothing that was on the current album.
No, it had never.
So this is taking advantage of the success.
But their song was called Love is a Wonderful Thing. Same title, but you can't copyright a title. So they filed this lawsuit, and, you know, it was not really anything similar except for their song was kind of a gospel, and ours was like Motown-y. So there was a tambourine that sounded the same because it's a tambourine, right? But anyway, so they got sued pretty heavily, and it was a trial. Courtroom trial, jury, the whole nine yards. So, and then my turn came at bat since I was the producer of the song. So I was testifying for a number of days, and I was, you know, very, very
nervous.
No, it was very educational.
Yeah,
like I would tell the jury, like, I could produce the Star Spangled Banner exactly the same way, tambourine, same sound, Motown. It's the arrangement and production that you think sounds the same, but the notes are different, the chords are different, and the lyrics are different, and certainly the title is not copyrightable. So I try to explain this whole thing to this jury, and unfortunately, Michael and Andy lost.
Wow.
It was a big loss. Because the Isley brothers would show up to court with, you know, in wheelchairs and crutches and neck braces and canes.
Tugging
and,
at the jury's heartstrings.
Oh, yeah. And Michael, you know, is this big superstar, rich guy coming in going, hey, you know.
It's a good Bolton impression.
So.
Wait, so that's fucked. And that happens, I mean, you tell me, in the music world, like, more often than not.
A lot. I've been sued so many times, bro.
Wow.
Yeah, Mariah Carey and I got sued really big. Yeah, it was...
Well, okay, so let's give people a little backstory.
Okay, that's it.
When I first met you through your lovely wife, Katie, great comedian, great person, kind, bubbly, infectious laugh, she goes, you got to meet my husband, Walter. He's the fucking man, which I immediately go, literally. I love that. Yeah, yeah. He wears the pants. I go, I love that, first of all, when I just hear anyone just celebrating the other side and being like, this guy rules and I got him and it fucked, yeah. And I love it.
Yeah.
And I was like already intrigued based on that. And then I don't think she had shared too many of your achievements and but said you're in the music world, producer. And I was like, oh, cool. But, you know, and I love to meet people and I'm, you know, and I can just tell whoever she's bringing to the table is going to, you know, match the energy and be fun and all that. And then a few things were revealed. And then I was like, get the fuck out of here. How often does that happen that people just like get to know you and then they're like, wait, you've done what?
Yeah, no, you know, I kind of tend to be very quiet about things.
Yeah.
Like if I'm with Katie anywhere in public.
Yeah.
People go, oh, so, you know, what do you do? And I go, I'm a songwriter, you know, I'm a producer. And then,
by the way, out here.
You know, and then it's like everybody's a songwriter.
Yes.
Producer, right? So, and then somebody will always say like, well, anything I know, you know, and I'll go, well, yeah, a few things. And then Katie will always go, what are you talking about?
You don't fucking know.
Yeah, tell them what you've done. Tell them all the songs. And I go, well, I don't really, you know, like to brag. So people think that I'm
which is not bragging.
Well, it's not bragging, but you know.
It's the life you've lived and the life you've created, but I get why you're eating such a big piece of humble pie and I appreciate it. But also, hey man, and it is cool when people have, I guess, pushed you up against the wall enough to where they're like, anything I've heard of? And
sure,
you're like,
sure.
All right, well, if you're going to be a little condescending about it, let me go down the list. So go down the list for us.
Okay, so my 10-year sort of decade of hits, if you call it, was the 90s. And in the 90s...
The best era of music, arguably.
Yeah, and so in the 90s, I did all the Mariah Carey records, all of her songs, including All I Want for Christmas Is You.
Which is the...
biggest Christmas song of all time. So... you know, so we did all her songs, really big ones, Hero, One Sweet Day, My All, you know, Can't Let Go, All One for, I mean, there was a lot of songs we did. I also was very, very busy producing Celine Dion. Ooh. I produced the Titanic song, My Heart Will Go On. I produced all these big Disney songs during the 90s. A Whole New World, Beauty and the Beast, you know.
I didn't know you did A Whole New World.
Yeah, A Whole New World, yeah.
Get the fuck out of here.
And, you know, talking about Michael Bolton, we did Go the Distance from Hercules.
Yes.
And then also one other one.
Beauty and the Beast, wasn't that,
Peebo Bryson and Celine Dion. Yeah.
Why do I know that name?
Yeah, right.
Because I was obsessed with that song.
You know, it was really weird because that song, well, no, Celine Dion and Peebo Bryson did Beauty and the Beast.
Yeah.
And then Peebo Bryson again.
Did A Whole New World.
A Whole New World with Regina Bell.
Wow.
And Beauty and the Beast didn't go number one, but A Whole New World went number one.
Yeah.
But all of those songs won Oscars and Grammys and Record of the Years and all that stuff. So, you know, so this company of stars, you know, we were working on, I don't know, so many records at the same. I had three studios running 24 hours a day.
No kidding.
You know, and it was just, it was awesome. You know, and then, you know, the 2000 decade came and things started petering off as far as ballads and stuff. It became more of a hip hop.
Yeah.
Kind of, you know, top 40 radio started getting very aggressive and
yeah.
less of the ballads, less, you know, the sweet songs and whatever.
It's funny how music does truly evolve like that, right? Like,
yeah.
I don't know if it's decade by decade. It's
cyclical,
but
I think. I mean, some of that stuff is coming back now and mm-hmm. we got a lot of sweet songs. But the thing that happened, so with this decade of super huge, successful decade, you know, some of these songs became household names and, you know, whatever. And, you know, because of the tremendous luck of being in the right place at the right time. I mean, this Christmas song is probably the thing that, you know, like, it's, everyone says it's the gift that keeps on giving.
Yeah.
You know?
Every
and,
year.
Yeah. And it's really, really cool to see that. But the only problem with that song is that Mariah Carey and I had a falling out 25 years ago. I haven't spoken to her in decades.
Wow.
And a lot of people.
It makes you feel any better. Neither have I.
Yeah. A lot of people have stopped talking to her. But anyway, so.
So the song was, yeah, okay. So
it's bittersweet,
yeah.
You know, because I don't get to share it with my songwriter partner. And
you did it at a time, right?
Yeah.
When it came out,
it was awesome. We were best friends, Mariah and I.
Do you know that song is going to be as big as it? I hear this all the time from, I mean, the same way that you ask a comic, like, do you know that was going to be an iconic joke? Or
yeah.
But I think more so for songs, I think, because songs just,
yeah.
I think more so than a comedy bit, have just more nostalgia, more emotional attachment, yeah. right? It's just the nature of music, right? Yeah. So as you're doing it, are there, I want to go back. You said like being in the studio, three different studios was awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm assuming that part of that awesomeness is the creation, right?
Yeah,
and the collaboration and then like looking at each other and building moments and going, oh, what the fuck? This could be, you want to think everything you're doing could be the next thing, right?
Well, yeah. Songwriters and producers, you know, we all have that belief that, oh my God, this is a fucking hit. This is a smash, you know? And you kind of like, that's what you aim for. You try to, you know, you learn the craft of writing a radio song. Like you don't write 6-minute songs. You'll write 3-minute songs because you know that's what gets on the radio. So in pop music, you start from day one learning how to do songs that are for radio.
Gotcha.
I mean, the Beatles had 2-minute songs, you know, 220, whatever. So when we're doing songs, you know, we try to we conform to that sort of, it's not a cookie cutter, but it's a formula of how to get.
There is.
You know. So, like, I did a song once with New Kids on the Block.
Yeah.
And it was one of those, everyone who heard this song went crazy. But.
You're saying, like, in the studio or who you'd
all
share
of us,
it with?
Yeah. The record company, of us, everything. Wow. But it was during the end of their, not careers, obviously, they're still big,
yeah.
New Kids on the Block, but. It was the end of this kind of era that they had crossed over the billion-dollar act mark already, and they were sort of losing their momentum and popularity, but still were. So radio stations decided not to play them anymore, not to play New Kids on the Block. So this song comes out, If You Go Away, it's called. And it was like,
if you go away, girl. It's fucking a beautiful song. Dude.
Yeah, so it was really great.
You've seen it live?
I've been there. I've done a live. So the thing is, all the radio stations were getting phone calls, all the calls from all the screaming girl fans. It was the number one requested song, but these fucking radio station program directors wouldn't play it.
Get the fuck out of here.
Because they're saying, no, you know. And
you don't know music.
You know, New Kids on the Block are old news, man. We don't want to play it.
Bro, but case in point, people are calling in. Like,
number one requested song for weeks.
It goes back to when I worked at Albertsons and people would come in at the customer service booth and complain about shit. My boss at the end of the day would go, dude, the customer's always right.
Yeah.
And I was like, hey, man, doesn't that somewhat apply to.
Exactly.
You have to give, like. I don't care if you know, fucking Don, you know, Pimple Popper thinks that like New Kids are, it's like, you got to listen to the people,
man. And the thing is it's kind of like politics, you know, these old dudes are going to tell every woman.
These young girls, wow, what to do with their bodies.
In the country,
I'm sorry, what to do with their, with the, their song choices.
You know, and you know, it's like, that's the way of the world. So anyway, New Kids, never had they didn't get that fair single, because it would have gone number one. It
was wow, and who knows what would have happened? I mean, everything happens for a reason. They took their break. They came back. You know, they're popping off again. But but man, that is interesting. I didn't realize the power. Well, I realized the power of radio because just in growing up in that era where, I mean, I was making mixtapes off of the radio songs, like, and hoping that I would have the cassette in there and be able to time it out when my song comes on. But guess what? Every song either starts with a little bit of the DJ segueing it in or 10 or 15 seconds in, because even if I was in the shower and I heard the song come on, I was like, fuck, I got to hit record so I can add this to the next, you know, put it in the rotation.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, so I don't know what the original
coming out of the was. 90s, and then you get into this decade to where
now we're getting into more.
Once you're stacking Grammys and a resume, right? Is that like, is that important in your world just as any other one where people now want to work with you because,
You know, in the 90s, if you got a Grammy for something, like I got a Grammy for Producer of the Year. So the Producer of the Year Grammy is a very coveted, hard as fuck to get Grammy.
Yeah, dude.
It's not like a song like you get, you know, nowadays, you know, Grammy Award for Record of the Year or Best New Artist or, you know, Song of the Year, whatever, whatever, Album of the Year. It's the general public who knows that song or that album is their favorite, whatever. But a producer is a special committee that votes and picks out the top producers of that year.
Yes.
So, I mean, it's hard to get in there amongst five slots, you know. So that was a big year. Although I was nominated many, many times, but to actually win a Grammy, it's hard.
Yeah.
Nowadays, and what happens, at least back then in the 90s or whatever, that's a really huge deal. People start calling you. Yeah, I want to work with you. I want to work with you. But I was exclusive to Sony Music. Like, I couldn't work with anybody I wanted.
That's a blessing and a curse?
It was more of a curse at the end, a blessing in the beginning. For 10 years, I did all the Sony, Columbia, you know, all that, which was all the artists we were just talking about, Mariah, Celine, everybody. So even like Billy Joel and, you know, Bruce Springsteen, they were all Sony artists.
Holy
Michael Jackson.
Shit.
Got to work with him. I mean, that
shut
was...
Shut the fuck up. On what?
Yeah, well, I did a song with him called Fall Again. Funniest story? Would you like to hear the funniest story?
I'm okay. Walter, when you were 15... please, dude. All I want is story time from you.
This is one of the best stories. So I was... that year, the Grammys were in New York and at Radio City Music Hall, which I totally miss. It was so classy and cool in New York City.
That's gotten what? Commercialized?
Now it's, you know, like Staples or whoever the fuck it is. You know, it's like a big deal. You know, now, last time it was in Vegas, you know.
Yeah.
Who cares? So this year we had a lot of success and everybody was really cool. I had just maybe, I don't know, it was right when I did all those Disney songs. This is why the story is so amazing. So we were all at a Sony Grammy party after the Grammy Awards. And it was like, everybody's in there, man. It was like anybody, everybody. In fact, there's a photograph of me standing with all the, you know, everyone.
Legends.
Did you Michael, everybody. You know.
Did you enjoy these things? Because you're fun. I partied with you. You're a fun social
dude. It was really nice, but still. So Tommy Mottola, who was the chairman, the Sony president.
Yes.
Like, he was the guy. He was my boss, everyone's boss.
And he would do what? He would... The one who ultimately picked the artists that were going to be on the label?
He's the ultimate decision maker of what goes on a record sometimes, even... Well, first of all, Mariah Carey was his wife eventually.
So he was
very, very, very careful with her career, her choices, her, you know, collaborations and all that stuff. I mean, he didn't tell Michael Jackson what to do, but he certainly told some people what to do.
Sure.
Because, you know, it was very, very hands-on.
Yeah.
We're at this big party and he comes over to me and goes, hey, come on, let's go say hi to Michael Jackson. You know, I go, let me introduce you to Michael Jackson. So I go,
he's fanning out.
Yeah, so he's like, yeah, come on, let's go. So Michael is sitting in this couch or on this chair. I walk up and Tommy to Michael goes, Mike, I want you to say hello to Walt. Walt just did all these beautiful songs for Disney. He did, you know, Whole New World, Beauty and the Beast. Michael Jackson is looking at me and he's hearing Walt and Disney. So in his Michael Jackson fucked up way, He grabs
and my he's thinking like a kid.
Yeah, he grabs my hand. He starts going, "Oh, Mickey Mouse, Mickey Mouse, I love Mickey Mouse. Walt, such a pleasure, Mickey." He thought I was Walt fucking Disney. I'm like, no, I'm not Walt Disney. And oh. Tommy goes, "Get out of here, Michael. This is Walter A., not Walt Disney." This guy thought I was Walt Disney.
How bummed out was he to know that
Walt
you were?
Walt Disney fucking died 30 years before that, man.
Yeah, like, simple math, like, dude.
I love Mickey Mouse. I love Mickey Mouse.
Oh, like, he starts doing a Donald Duck impression for you?
No, man, it was just so weird, man.
Wow.
And then part two.
By the way, you're the... I guarantee you that's probably only happened that time ever. Where Michael Jackson thought he met Walt Disney and you got to feel it.
Yeah.
You got to look into his eyes and see what it would look like, which nobody did, even Mike, because he never met him because he died 30 years prior to that moment.
Yeah.
That's bonkers.
But then it happened again.
What?
Michael Jackson and I are in New York in the studio.
Like, this is Mario Lopez?
No. So we're doing the song that... My dear friend Robin Thicke, the singer.
Yes, incredible.
He and I wrote this song called Fall Again. Michael, you know, he has his kids in the other room with his Israeli bodyguards, and he's in the vocal booth.
Yeah.
His engineer is sitting next to me, and it's me, the three of us. We're in there for 2 days, 3 days, right? And on like the second or third day we're in the studio, he's looking at the lyrics, and it says Fall Again, and the two writers... It's like me and Robin Thicke, but it says Walter A, because everybody called me Walter A.
Yeah.
So he's looking at the thing, and he always has a video camera on him. He's always looking at his, you know, TV screen of his own image, because he's in a whatever. So.
Yeah.
So he's looking at me, and he's looking at the lyric, and he's like going, Walter A, Walter A, I thought that you were Master P. And I go, I looked at the engineer, I go, is he fucking kidding? He goes, no, he thought you were Master P. Do you know Master P's African-American big guy with the hat?
Yeah,
teeth?
Yeah.
I'm not Master, I clearly.
Not with that attitude, but yeah, no, you're definitely.
So I go, Michael, first you thought it was Walt Disney. Now you think I'm Master P. This fucking guy, man. You know?
Oh,
anyway.
My God.
Master P.
Okay, well, clearly, so, you know, brilliant. In the studio, Mike, yeah?
Oh, genius. I mean, absolutely.
Because I don't know how you rank the people you've worked with. When you do you have just the same way there's a formula to writing a hit radio song? Is there a requirement or a beat sheet of like, here's what I expect in the studio and here's what if we have like the ideal experience, here's what we're all walking away with?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and first of all,
did Mike exceed those?
Yeah. Michael had, you know, his way of doing things, because he's Michael. Like Mariah Carey has her way of doing things. Barbara Streisand has her way of doing things. You know, when I work with, you know, Whitney Houston or Aretha Franklin or any people.
Oh, my they God. All,
like Luther Vandross definitely has his own way.
What about Goofy? What was he like?
I never worked with Goofy.
I thought you were...
No, that was... Yeah.
Walt Disney.
That was my brother.
Yeah. Just calling it back.
But what you do is you go into a studio with two types of artists. Number one, you're either working with an artist songwriter like Mariah, because she would write with me all the songs.
Okay, so that's a different beast then.
So that's a whole different thing. She can come up with whatever she wants. She's a songwriter in this. So if she wants to change a note, please do.
Gotcha.
If we wrote a song or somebody picked a song for somebody like Celine, who's not a writer, Celine Dion is in the studio, and I need to direct her like a film director going,
ooh,
okay, read the lines as they are. You can't change the lines. You can't change any. So we need to get, you know, some really good takes out of you. And then we're going to put a comp together, composite.
Yep.
And we're going to, you know, tune where it needs to be tuned.
Yep.
Time it better if it needs to be timed. And that's a different artist. So there's two different types.
Gotcha.
Michael was always a writer, artist. And, you know, other people are like, just tell me what to do.
I was going to say, some people, and that's fine, right?
Yeah.
Oh, some people are just
they
like,
want that.
Yeah.
They go, you know, I'm not saying I'm like a big time director like Steven Spielberg or something like that would always be on set. I'm sure actors are going, please just tell
me. Give me a line reading.
Just tell me what to do.
Yes.
You know, direct me.
Yes.
Great. Let's get an Oscar. Let's
what
do it.
What do you prefer?
I prefer that. I prefer me being in control.
Gotcha.
So, you know, but clearly there's those legends like Streisand. She always listens to me. She'll go, yeah, I love that. And I love that chord and I love the melody. But she'll even tell, like, we were doing an album once and she was doing a lot of Stephen Sondheim songs.
Mm.
Stephen Sondheim.
Genius.
You can't change fucking words or notes on a Stephen Sondheim, especially after it's been out.
Into the Woods?
No, especially after it's been out, like Sending the Clowns or some mega standard.
That's locked in.
You know, Barbara would have like a suggestion. Instead of this word, maybe we can change. And Stephen would be on the phone.
What?
Like I'm in the room, Barbara, and Stephen Sondheim's on the phone. Well, I don't like that, you know, Barbara. And like, you know, how he talked. He's like, Walter, don't let her do that. You know,
oh my God.
But then I'll put in a couple of different chords. Like I love changing chords, substitutions.
Yeah.
He'll go, I like that one, but I don't like that one. Go back to the chord I wrote.
Oh my God.
Although there's other people who just, they don't want you changing anything ever, you know, so.
So, because I would see videos of, that's fascinating, by the way. Thank you for this. Pulling the curtain back just a little bit. I have seen many of videos of Mike, like, you know, just like you were doing up top, like, you know, like, and so, so that's there's not everyone's like that in the studio where they're hearing what it should be and they're just like, right? And then they're like laying it out and then hoping that you just then get that down for them to then, some people.
But the thing about Michael is like, if it's a song he loved because he heard a demo of it.
Mm.
Like the record company will send him songs. And like, oh, I love this song.
Yeah.
So there's no surprises. He already knows the song. He knows how it goes. There'll be a little bit of a rough spot for him. We'll work it out, you know, because, you know, at the end of the day, not everybody can do whatever, you know, it's like he can't do everything.
Yeah.
Other people like for instance, Luther Vandross, he could do one take. And
crush
it's just done.
Oh my God.
I can just one take, you know.
Here and now. Did you do that?
I didn't do that. I did an album with him called.
All right. This has been Walter. Thank you for coming by. No.
The fuck is songs? It's all these famous Motown and songs. But it's just covers.
Wow.
But we did a song from a Broadway musical called The Impossible Dream. And we did it with the London Symphony, man.
Oh, my God.
And he did one take, and everybody was crying.
Like, oh, my God.
It's like, just please, anybody who has the a way, go on Spotify or whatever and just call up Luther Vandross, The Impossible Dream.
Man. One take.
One take. One take.
That's rare, no?
It's totally rare. I've done artists, some of these I won't mention.
Sure.
I did an artist once who had 70 takes.
Of a full song or?
She had to sing 70 times.
Dear God.
Oh, sorry. I didn't mean to say she.
Sure.
But she's a huge star.
Closer.
Huge star.
Wow.
Some people,
that's frustrating.
Some people do perfectionist like crazy shit. Mariah would sing perfectly most of the time, you know, but she always wanted to better it, and just, you know, top it.
But you can't hate on that, right?
No.
Like you want to encourage that.
But it gets to the point where you go, Mariah, come on, man. It's like we have 30, 40 tracks. It's fine.
And
there's nothing there.
You're frying your pipes probably. You got to be somewhat conservative of that or no? Is that?
I mean, I at some point in time, a Michael Bolton song that we did, When a Man Loves a Woman, he calls me after the album's already pressed. The album's already like almost about to come out. He calls me and he goes, I need to re-sing When a Man Loves a Woman. And I go, whoa, why? It's perfect.
Can you imagine if I'm at Sam Goody about to pick up a copy and he shows up and just goes, give me that, and grabs it out of my hand?
So before it comes out, he goes, we got to do it. And I go, why? It's perfect.
Yeah.
Turns out that somebody at the label at Columbia
got in his head,
did a review of that song and said, you know, and he got this like insecurity about it.
Oh, man.
Right? And it was just so unnecessary. So I flew to LA. He's there. We started singing. And by the way, we worked a week on that song. That was a heavy song to sing.
And he's belting.
Yeah. So it was like perfect and it was done. And now he's trying to do it all over again in one day what it took already 4 or 5 days to do. And it's nowhere near. It sucks. It's sucking ass. And I'm looking at it about 3 hours into it. He looks at me and he goes, this is dumb, right? I go, yeah, you're a fucking idiot. You can't beat that.
No.
He goes, sorry I wasted your time, man.
Wow.
Song won a Grammy.
Wow. So,
male, best pop vocal, you know, Grammy Award for Michael that year. So you know, people just get insecure about shit and they got to go do it again and again and again. And I get it, like with actors, like when you do your scenes, I don't know how many scenes takes you guys did.
Oh, yeah.
For Heat or for fucking whatever, all those parts that you do.
Yeah.
I mean, it could be one take, it could be two, it could be five. I don't know.
Oh, bro. And yeah, there are times when, I mean, shit, even on Pam and Tommy, there was like, we did certain scenes would maybe be two or three and then some a few more. And then there were times when I'm like, oh, I would love one more. But you pick and choose when to speak up because you see things depending on where in the day it falls and like what they need to get to and what, and it, you know, to your point on this Bolton story, it's like at some point you also are like, am I over editing? Am I being overly critical of what like that was? You know, but in your head, you're just like, this is fucking it. And then you also just don't know what's going to be used in editing. You're like, I could give one more. They could still pick the first one.
But like, for instance, a different director from one from another, like Paul
Feig
would be, you know, different than, you know.
Totally.
Like, so he might say that was perfect, Adam.
Yep. He is like that. He just gave me a little part in this Netflix movie he's doing that's like Charlize Theron and Ben Kingsley. It's called The School of Good and Evil and like a fantasy film and I came in with some choices, made these choices. He was like, I'm thinking it's more like this. I'm like, okay. We did like three or four that way. And then I go, all right, now that I'm seeing, I think what you're seeing, how about this? He goes, yeah, that's good too. So now add that on top of what I was thinking. And then did one of those, and he goes, yeah. And then I go, I'm thinking this too. And he goes, yeah, try that. Did it, and he goes, nailed it. And then patted me on, and then that was that.
Good.
And it was like this
really
collaborative, exploratory, which is my favorite way to do it, you know, instead of just being like, I'm going to do this, and having someone go, cool, do that. You're like, oh, fuck.
Yeah.
Give me something.
I have this friend of mine, Tom Jane.
Mm.
Thomas Jane.
Yeah.
And he was telling me when they were shooting Boogie Nights.
Oh, yeah.
And there's this scene where they're at this coffee table snorting a bunch of blow.
Yes.
And the camera's underneath the glass coffee table. Yeah. And you could see everybody.
Yeah.
He said that Paul Anderson, the director, was like, I want you just to keep going and keep rolling and try different types and different ways and, you know, just keep going. And it wasn't cocaine, obviously. Yeah. It was like, but still they had to snort this baby powder.
Yeah,
I don't know what
it
was. But there's a thing where they have to keep going and going and going. And I'm like going, wow, man, that's kind of, and then later on they edit it. But I mean, it's the same thing with music, man.
You're almost like a manager in a way. Just all these things you're mentioning with like certain artists, like there's different personalities that you, cause I mean, are you, you're holding court in the studio. Yeah. When you guys go in, are you kind of like,
well, I'm sort of the boss.
Yes.
You know, it's like, you know, all right, places, everyone, you gotta, you know, now we're going to do this. Now we're going to do that.
So the order of the day is you've structured it out.
And I'll go, I need one more. I need one. Like there's a story that I have about Celine Dion, which is a wonderful example of what a producer can be capable of.
Yeah, yeah.
So we're in Montreal doing her album, and there's a song in the album called With This Tear, and Prince wrote it.
Oh, my
God. For Celine. And
real quick, is that normal?
Not really, no. I mean, Prince wrote, you know, for Sinead O'Connor.
Yes.
I mean, you know, like people write, Stevie Wonder wrote for, you know, a lot of people. So Prince wrote this song and it wasn't good for him, but he wrote it and he goes, I want Celine to do it. And the song is called With This Tear. And it was the saddest song you can ever hear. It's about somebody who dies, your love who's dead.
Oh, man.
And she's thinking with this tear, she's thinking about him. You know, I want you back in my life and I just can't live without you and you're gone. You know, that kind of thing. So we're all like, in Montreal, we're playing ping pong. Everybody's having fun.
She plays ping pong?
You know, no, her husband, Renee, me and her. But, everybody's like, you know, joking around. We're all laughing. And you know, her mom and dad are down the street and all her brothers and sisters. She's at home and it's Celine Dion and whatever. So it's a happy
day. Good vibes.
Right, it's a happy vibe. Yeah. So we start singing this song. So she's like going, you know, literally with a smile on her face going, with this tear, you know, and I'm like, oh, no. didn't get zero, you know, emotion or sadness or anything like that. So I was like, oh, fuck. All right, let's try it again. Let's just, you know, just kind of, it's got to be a little darker, a little more sad, you know.
So that's take one.
Yeah.
So and right out of the gate, you're just like, all right, how do I get her to?
We need you to sell this song to everybody out there and have them feel the pain that you're feeling. And she's like going, I don't know if I can do that.
Go there, yeah.
You know, it's, I'm so happy like that.
Wow.
So anyway, I literally did this. Celine, who's the most important person in your life? She goes, my mother. And I go, what if your mother has died? Like, think about your mother dying. And she just went, oh, don't even go there. Don't go there. Don't you dare say that. And I'm like, oh, no, please. You need to think about something so important, the love of your life being dead like that. And I don't know what else to say to you. But she's like going, I can't think about that. Oh, no, no, no. Oh, no, you're going to make me cry. I'm thinking about my... And I go, please think about it. And I go, roll it. Roll the tape. And she's like, with this tear. And I mean, it was...
breathtaking.
It was breathtaking.
Holy
like, literally
shit,
just man. Completely like tear jerking. And when you hear it, she's really feeling, you know, her... pain.
Now, if she hadn't gotten there, would you have like called her mom in and been like, lay down on the couch, like, let's pale her up a little?
I'm you probably know. Gonna say that if eventually, you know, like an actor, director, like,
yeah,
well, can I talk to you?
Yes,
you really, really need to get to this place.
But more often than not, what are in maybe, your experience, they're you know, capable enough to be like, here's the circumstance, I need you to think about this, right? Here's some stuff to grasp onto, yeah. And you could see it, and then it was just like fucking go time, right?
Yeah, it was a very welcome moment when she started singing the right way, because not everybody can just turn on a dime,
right?
But actors, to me, like comics and actors, to me, that's the hardest gig in the world. Like you need to go, you know, like cry on camera, or you know what I mean? It's crazy for me, you know. And same thing in a song. I mean, you gotta sell the lyrics.
Did she feel it?
She felt, and she was very grateful. And then Prince called us because we sent him the take, and we comped it, whatever. And he calls and he's like, "I just want to tell you guys that you did such an amazing job, Walter. You did such a great, you know, whatever."
Oh my God,
Prince,
dude.
Prince.
Thanks, Prince.
Yeah, but it, you know, but you get to these places in your career, and it's like, wow, man, I got to be there.
I was just going to say, are those things lost on you? Or are you always, because you got to find that balance of like fan and profesh, right?
Yeah.
But also, I always say, what's the point of fuck? You got into this because of the fan fun factor, right? So everyone, like our world, like it's, so if you're not allowing yourself some of that, like, I don't know. I mean, you tell me, were there times where you're in the studio and you're looking over and you're like, that's fucking Lady Gaga. Like I'm fucking telling her what to sing right now.
It's I mean, when like sitting in the studio, like the first day I worked with Barbara Streisand, that was like, you know, I met Barbara Streisand. I didn't really meet her, but I stood in front of her when I was 7 or 8 years old. She was on a film set in San Francisco of a film she did called What's Up Doc. Ryan O'Neill, Barbara Streisand, and it was on the streets. So my elementary school was right down the street, and our teacher said, hey kids, we're going to take a little field trip down the street where they're, you know, shooting a movie. And she's already then, that's Barbara Streisand,
yes,
you know?
Yes.
So we kind of, so I knew of her, and about, so cut to the very first day in the studio, I'm like, Jesus, I get to work with her, you know? And I really, really, you know, I guess I did a great job because she's very judge, you know, like she doesn't like
particular.
Everybody.
Yeah.
She's very particular, but she took a liking to me. So I've stayed her producer for 5-6 albums now.
Yeah, you said pre-show you guys were you mentioned you're jamming on a Christmas song right now.
Yeah, so right now we're doing two projects for her. One is that she has been very successful in her career with some Christmas albums that she has done. And always, every Christmas season, you know, you have your Perry Como's, you have your Bing Crosby's, you have your, you know, whatever. Barbara Streisand's Christmas music is very popular. So this year, her record company, Sony, decided to do a compilation Christmas album, but with two new, I think, songs. This is what I'm hearing.
Yeah.
It might not be true, but I'm taking the bull by the horns. So I'm taking it on my own to write a Christmas song. And maybe she'll like it. You know, we'll see what happens. But it's not a done deal yet, but it's...
That'd be killer.
It would be great, yeah. Now,
I mean, is there, just like you said, there's a formula going into the studio. I mean, writing it...
Can I ask you a favor?
Please.
Is this thing anywhere near editable?
Yes, all of it. We can stop right now and do whatever. Yeah.
Could we edit the Christmas Barbra Streisand yep. project out?
Yep.
Because I just realized that I can't talk about it. Okay.
Yes, totally.
Yeah, so, but like you said, I'm trying to write some songs to get on, you know, that's what we do. We write songs to get on albums for artists. You know, so I'm writing some Christmas music, hopefully for someone like Barbara or somebody to sing.
Well, let me ask you this. Yeah. Let me ask you this. Writing, just going back now to the Christmas world for a beat, All I Want for Christmas is You. We got off on a little tangent, but what comes first with that? Take me through just like sitting down with Mariah. You've done albums. Yeah. This song comes at what point in your journey together?
Right.
After quite a bit, right?
Yeah, we've done, at that point, I think we did two or three albums so far already.
Okay.
And it was in 1994. So yeah, I started working with Mariah in 1989, 1990.
Yes.
So this is well into our relationship of producer songwriting partners. We've written many songs together, and you know, it's a thing now. But back then in the 90s, Christmas albums were not like not nowadays. People, they do Christmas. Everyone wants to do a Christmas album. Some artists do a Christmas album first because it's a huge.
They're so popular.
They're so popular.
So it's inevitable at some point if you're a successful recording artist to just go, when are we doing the Christmas album?
Yeah. But back then...
Let me throw this out there. Hanukkah, dude, we are waiting for our hit, baby. So, yeah.
But think of it that a record company would always go, look at a Christmas album. That happens at the end of your career. You know, like in
whoa!
The, you know, that's when... That's back
your
in those
swan
days.
Song.
When you end up in Vegas, that's the end of your career. Nowadays, people want to
start
be
a residency. Yeah.
Residency. Christmas albums were the same thing. Like, you know, nobody does a Christmas album. That's like when you're old and kind of
laying on the piano,
you
know, with your hoo-ha.
You're just about ready to retire or something like that. So, but Mariah was just a Christmas freak. She loves Christmas. She was very, very, very just like a little girl when it comes to
passionate, you know, about the holiday and the festivities.
All of that stuff. So she invited me, her and Tommy, her husband. And they were renting a house, I think, at that time. And, you know, we were all in this writing stage first. We were always together writing songs. And then after we wrote for, you know, 6 months or whatever, she'd pick all the favorite ones. And then we'd start kind of recording the recording process. So in this particular time and place, as I remember it, we wanted to have a bunch of different covers of Christmas songs. Mm. And we wanted to write some originals. So I kind of go, well, you know, Mariah, there's like three categories of Christmas music. There's the fun, you know, the kids, you know, Jingle Bells, Frosty the Snowman, all that crap. Then there's this sort of like a romantic area of Christmas songs, you know, I'll be home for Christmas, all this like, you know, World War II stuff. And then there's this religious batch of Christmas, you know, Hark the Herald Angels Sing, you know, Joy to the World, all that shit. So I go, why don't we write one like that, one like this, and one like that? You know, so we wrote this really beautiful sort of a religious thing. It's called Jesus Born on This Day. And it's very kind of classical. It has a kid's choir, and it's all beautiful and everything. Then we wrote this really romantic kind of a ballad called Miss You Most at Christmas.
I bet that crushed.
It's a great song.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we started kind of messing around with the theme of the album. Was a little gospel, a little kind of like Phil Spector meets, you know, old rock and roll kind of stuff vibe. So we kind of went into that direction. So kind of like boogie woogie rock and roll piano. And then, you know, we started to play around with this thing. And she started singing and we sort of, you know, came up with these sections, the verse, you know. Then we had this really cool chorus, you know. I just want you for my own. All I want for Christmas is you. And usually,
you remember like the moment, like playing that.
I remember doing, you know, boom, you know, the piano. It's a really hard song to play.
Fuck yeah.
Because, you know, it's like really fast and you just got to keep going. Anyway, we got this really great idea out, and she was going to go finish the lyrics, and I was going to go home where I lived in San Francisco, and I'm going to just start plotting out the musical track.
Okay, so you laid down a
rough draft. Here's the sections.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Didn't even have an intro or anything yet.
And she's just kind of singing some words and then some melodies.
Some cool things. Yeah. And we got like most of the direction kind of done.
Because I'm always curious if there's like a somewhere out there, like for her, just as she's trying to find the lyrics,
Well, she says nowadays, when she tells the story of how we wrote the song, she said that she has carried since her childhood some of this All I Want for Christmas Is You melody and lyrics. I don't remember it that way. Wow. I remember it being
in the moment.
You know, we kind of were in the moment.
Sure.
She didn't go, hey man, I have this really old idea.
Which you feel like would be the appropriate
and
time.
And it kind of goes like this, Walter. Can you play that for a second? Okay, so this is my old, nothing. No, it was like—
None of that.
Like, we just created it right there and then.
Yeah.
So three original songs. So I went home and I started messing around. So I actually came up with this rubato. I don't want a lot for Christmas.
There's
it's almost conducted kind of.
Oh yeah, it's epic. What people remember most about that song, because anywhere, anytime you hear that, people get they puff their chest up because they know they're about to belt the chorus.
Yeah, exactly. And it was a timpani and a—
This is a Jew saying this, by the way.
Tubular bells and, you know, all these strings and all this stuff.
You built all that out at home.
I built it all out, and I sort of didn't even know if she was going to like this whole rubato intro. And then it stops. All I want for Christmas is... And then I go... And then the whole thing takes off. So she liked the track.
Wow.
I went to New York, and it was just me on the track. There's only one person playing everything, me. And then she sang with her girls, all the vocals. And we were in New York doing that. And the thing is, she liked everything, and it just became... It wasn't like in our heads at any time that this was going to become what it would become. I thought Miss You Most at Christmas was going to be the big song because it was this Mariah ballad. And lo and behold, the first year that it came out, it didn't go... So perpetually, nowadays, it's like exponentially every year.
Yes.
It's getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. And for the last 3 years in a row, it goes number one on the Billboard Top 100 every year. And that's, it's never been that. It's like a World Guinness, whatever, all those records.
For how many years has it done that?
It goes number one as a Christmas song for 25 years now. So it's the number one Christmas song every year on the Christmas charts, but it's been going number one on the pop top one, you know, the top 100 for the last few years.
Mo, I mean, you know, how many times have you heard it, sung it, felt it? Every year. That's what's crazy about it, is that you go, there's certain things in this world, whether it's fucking Pop-Tarts, sex, Tom Hanks, where everyone knows what's up. Everyone's like, yeah, I know of that. I've done that. I've been a part of that. I've experienced that.
Yeah.
That song is in that same boat.
You know,
find anyone, like truly.
It's really strange. I mean, I get to talk, I get to tell the story. I get to be in this one of two people on Earth's place. Like, and you know, my kids, my grandkids, my wife, Katie, my parents, all of our friends, there's this thing that happened in my life that we're all like greatly, you know, we benefit. Yeah. There's, it makes a lot of money.
Yeah.
Half of it goes to, you know, my family over there, you know.
That's really sweet.
So there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of wonderful things that have become, you know, at least my, so I'm very grateful for that. I mean, not to mention all the other songs that I got to do with Mariah and everybody else. It's been a wonderful, you know, It's not over yet, but
no,
still,
you know. I feel like you're just
now I'm more interested in scoring films, though. That's what I'm going to be doing.
No
mostly.
Shit.
Yeah, because you know I can't compete anymore with this hip hop, this top 40 radio. This, you know, it's not going to happen. Even like, what am I going to do? Work with Billie Eilish? No, Billie Eilish works with her brother. You know, whatever.
Right.
I'm not going to probably. I almost got to do a Christmas album with Lady Gaga. You mentioned
yes.
Lady Gaga. But I don't think that's going to happen either because, you know, people just say something and they want and they change their minds. And
so is it a little bit, because I feel like with your track record and your resume that there are artists out there that would know that and know that you're still operating at a high level, would want to be a part of that, would want to be like the same way that you see like NBA players will go practice in the summertime with guys who are fresh out of the league or 10 years out of the league. You know, Michael Jordan still works out with yeah. young guys. So yeah. it's like, why wouldn't you want to be,
yeah.
have the best, like be around that?
Well, here, it, from what I get, I mean, if I had my way, I would be doing Broadway, mm. you know, music, I write Broadway musical.
Well, I've wanted to write a musical for my entire life. So,
yeah. So, and it's a really hard thing because it takes a long time.
Oh yeah.
And you're competing with a million shows that are being written yes. every single day. You know, and it's a really hard, there's only so many theaters and it's a really hard club to get into. It's very, very hard. Secondly, film scores, really hard club to get into because all the cats in LA who are all scoring films. I mean, Danny Elfman and, you know, all the major guys are, you know, there's like 100 really top guys. Hans Zimmer's the number one. You know,
incredible,
all the way
yeah.
down. So you got to go try to get in there somehow. You know, and I don't have the.
How
know,
do you do that?
You got to have an agent. You got to have the luck of just, it's luck.
Networking it's really too, is. Right? Just like maybe being at a Hans Zimmer fucking, you know, ice cream social at some point. Just
It could be a little bit. My experience is if I get in and become friends and friendly and prove to a director, you know, like oh, I have now, like Paul.
Yeah.
Being, Taika Waititi is a really dear friend of mine. Mm. Who is, you know, Jeff Thompson, all these like director friends who, and foreign directors that I am very friendly with. But somehow I have to prove to them, hey yeah. man, I can score your movie.
Yeah.
And they're involved in a very big deal way too, because they have a huge studio. Like what is Taika going to, hey, I'm going to use my friend Walter. No, he's got to go through, you know, Marvel and every studio and the producers. And, you know, he can't just decide that. But it's the director ultimately, as you know, who's going to. So I'm actually starting a very huge movie, hopefully at the end of this year.
Wow.
And next year. It's an epic film about, you know, like the Persian Empire.
It's holy
like, you know,
shit.
It's about this Tamerlan, this big ruler of the Persian Empire. And it's like one of those, you know, like Gladiator
shots,
meets
yeah.
Troy meets, you know,
whoa.
Whatever. So I get to finally do, you know, that kind of a thing.
Are you pumped?
Totally pumped.
You love the work.
I love it.
You love what you do still.
Yeah, I think that it's, yeah. I mean, it's the only thing that makes me cry, music.
Yeah.
You know, like I'll listen to music and it just, like I was watching this last season of American Idol.
Yeah.
To be very cheesy right now.
Spent a lot of tears on that show.
There's a girl, Nicolina, this singer that just ruined, when she sang, like she did the finale this last Sunday night. They picked the winner, but she sang with Sarah Bareilles, one of her songs.
It's also incredible.
And it's just every time she sings, I cry.
Wow.
Me and Katie, just my wife, we just sit there and cry. There's only a few singers that could do that, you know? Like a movie that you have been watching and you
yes.
just start bawling.
Yes.
Like, you know, I don't care if it's Color Purple or Steel Magnolias or whatever.
Red Six.
But,
yeah, cool.
But not
Runnings.
Every movie
yeah.
does that, right? So it has to be
yeah.
a certain level of emotional, just like it hits me. And that's the way it is with artists. You know, you got to be able to hit me, you know, otherwise I don't want to work with you.
Is that your kind of... I love that. And that also does translate over to comedy
oh,
as
yeah.
far as like you people want to laugh, but the connection, there's there has to be an emotional attachment to what we're saying for you to feel compelled to laugh. And the laughing sometimes, there's an overarching silliness that comes with it, but people need to feel invested and connected.
Yeah. But if I may say,
please,
of all of the comics that I'm always in the audience, because Katie's, you know, has her shows and we're all
everyone's
there
at the Laugh Factory.
There's very little, there are very few comedians who make me laugh because
you watch so much.
I have a really great sense of humor. Yeah. I do. But most comics don't make me laugh. You're one of the comics who makes me pee in my pants laughing.
Whoa.
So you, Amir, there's these guys out there and there's so little of you that just make me, I believe in this. Yeah, man.
Wow.
You know?
Why now? I'll say this. I feel like I'm present 100% of the time, all the time. And I think Amir is too.
Yeah. Well, you guys are extraordinary you know, like your spontaneity.
Right.
Your instant rapport, like you go over there and instantly you make it so, it's such a talent, man. Mm. Like, you know, I mean, I think you're a good actor too, but man, when you're on stage, you're so fucking funny. It's crazy.
Thanks,
but, man. And it's not like, you know, like a lot of comics have, you know, they do some jokes, you know, all the time. They're, you know, they have their show. Like there's comics that repeat their exact from the moment they open their mouth.
Bro, there's a bunch of brilliant ones that do that.
You know, whatever, but it's the same thing. And if you see them 5, 10, 20 times, you kind of, it loses the effect.
Sure.
But you're always different. You always have some cool thing. And I think it's the scariest job in the world. Mm. Like literally to be a comic. I mean, what if somebody starts heckling you or, just, you know, or fucking.
You've seen it?
Dave Chappelle, you know, comes at you with a knife, man.
Yeah, add that to the list of concerns now. Yeah. I love that you said I can't get over how that you said at the beginning of this podcast how awesome it is to just be in the studio, because that to me, and the few times I've been in studios and watched people work, and again, the collaboration that happens, I'm curious, did you always, like as a kid, what was the music that found you, that got you? Because I'm assuming you didn't just find this in your 20s. To be doing what you're doing has to have been like from the get-go.
Yeah, it was when I was 5 years old, 6 years old, and I heard the Beatles for the first time. My parents moved to San Francisco in 1962. I was born in 1958. So in 1964, when She Loves You, and all the Beatles stuff starts coming out, I started to listen to that, and literally my daydream, my just fantasy, is that they're gonna knock on my door and I'm gonna get to be in the Beatles one day. And this is, you know, and I was a little kid just sitting on my bed. My parents bought this like little AM radio and I had it tuned to a station called KFRC in San Francisco. And when the Beatles came on, that was it. They're the reason. And following their very short career, which is only up until 1969, and then they broke up. But the amount of versatility and the whole body of their work is so massively, like it's so crazy.
Yeah.
It's not just one thing over and over again, you know? Like there are groups that, you know, it's just a different song, but it sounds
similar chords, like
whatever,
yeah.
You know? And so that got me interested in music, and I just started paying attention to music. And I've always studied piano, and I always played drums, and I always played guitar. And I just kind of like think that it's something that always came easy for me. And I'm probably one of the most lazy people, because I could never have a job like anywhere doing anything except for music.
Fuck that.
Like,
yeah, I don't know how.
Yeah. So, and it just kind of, you know, got me through it. But I used to play in cover bands.
Oh, yeah.
Wedding bands. God, man. I did four weddings in one day once.
Holy shit.
It was hard.
There's a documentary there.
Yeah, man. And it was hard, you know, because you have a dream, but you're playing these like parties and, you know, weddings and bar mitzvahs.
That's what people want to hear, right?
You know, Freebird, play Freebird. Like I got beat up once at a fucking party that I was
playing. For what?
At.
Putting your foot down and being
because,
like.
Because it was for, there was these Lithuanian volleyballers.
Oh my God.
And my, the guitar player goes, yeah, and our keyboard player, this, our Russian keyboard player. And it was like during the
70s,
you know, Cold War. Yeah. And it was like, fuck you, Russian. We're going to take you out back and smack you around, you know, because, you know, they were under Soviet, you know, communist, whatever. So yeah, it was, man, like, you know, it was hard. But yeah, I remember really, really just wishing every day. God, I just wish. I don't want to play Celebrate, you know, like, Celebrate. Oh, good times. Come on. I played at a party, but it was, I'm not saying anything about this. I mean, but it was for some association or organization for handicapped people, for mentally handicapped people, whatever. And I just remember this guy standing next to me, spitting on me, like literally just spitting on me, because I mean, he couldn't help it, but
yeah,
but it was like, this is,
and nobody's doing anything.
This is no, but this is my career. I'm playing.
Wow.
And I'm being spit on, you know,
just taking it.
And I've just, you know, and I would go home and just wish.
The song you were playing, Take On Me, and you're like, fine, he was changing it to Spit On Me, and you're like, fucking, all right, that's kind of funny, but still inappropriate.
It is funny, man. But we've had gigs, man, where you forget. Like, I remember one gig. So my guitar player, Chris Camozzi, he ended up being Michael Bolton's guitar player. So we're all 15, 16, 17 years old, you know, and we're like lugging our equipment and schlepping all over the place. We had this one gig, and it was like the Holiday Inn in a place called Livermore, California.
Yikes.
Up north.
This all sounds made up.
It's cow country. It's just really literally, you know, and it's the night before the championship, 49ers against the Dallas Cowboys.
Holy shit.
So it's the night before Saturday night, and we're playing at this Livermore Holiday Inn. Mm. And we played like light jazz. It was like, you know, Stevie Wonder, you know, Stephen Bishop, you know, little, like, you know, George
Fun
Benson
standards.
Shit,
yeah.
You know, whatever. So I'm like screwing in the legs of my electric piano. It's called the Fender Rhodes, and I'm screwing the legs, and I'm looking out into the bar. Nothing but cowboy hats.
Yikes.
Wrangler jeans, cowboy boots, cowboy hats. Like 100 of them.
Play Spit On Me.
No,
white boy.
So I'm like screwing in my leg into the piano, and the waitress comes up and says, I'm supposed to give you this. And she gives me a napkin.
Oh no.
And it says, you better fucking play Waylon, Willie, or Hank. That's all.
Oh,
that's all it says.
Man.
And I go, oh shit. We don't know any of those. Like zero.
So you turn to the band like, hey guys.
So I told my guy, Chris Camozzi, I go, do you know any?
Oh,
he
shit.
He goes, no. We played 4 hours of On the Road Again. Over and over and over again. Because they were going to kill us if we did.
Did they love it?
Well, I mean, eventually y'all got drunk and everything like that. But it was just, you know.
Oh my God.
That's the kind of shit, man. I remember one time, I mean, it was just, you know, gig after gig.
Just cutting your teeth.
Yeah, you know, just, man.
It's all part of it. Every business.
Gonna happen? When is it going to happen?
When's
it
going to happen? Yeah.
When is it going to happen? When is it going to happen? And it happened, you know. I got lucky enough. I got, you know, into a bigger band and, you know, went on tour and, you know, so it, but not everybody, you know, everybody just like all of the people that I used to do this with, none of those guys ever made it out of, you know, that whole.
I was just going to say, there's got to be people that you have come up with that you're like, all right, you know, why didn't it happen for them? Or they look at you and go, congrats, man. And fuck, like.
No, they have a little bit of both. They go, God, we're so proud of you, but how come it didn't happen for us? Well, not everybody, I don't know. I mean.
There's factors always. I mean, some people.
Not everybody wrote the songs that I could, I mean, you know, or arrange or whatever.
Yes.
Plus I had the mother instrument, the keyboards. You know, you're just the bass player. So,
yes.
Or, you know, you're the drummer and not very good.
Yes.
You know, whatever.
Yeah, dude, there's. You know. A lot of factors. You're a fucking legend. I want to close this out with, and I could talk to you for hours. We're going to have to do a part two and a part three
because
I feel like
Let's
we're just scratching the surface. I close every episode out with a Inside the Actor Studio 10 questionnaire.
Okay.
RIP James Lipton. You no doubt would have been on the show at some point, so we're going to get to know Walter. And pronounce your last name.
Afanasyev.
And that's just Russian.
It's a Russian name.
Russian Jew over here.
Yeah, man.
Ray comes from Brown, which came from Brovernik, which was...
But I stand with Ukraine.
Me too. Yeah. Always dog.
Fuck Russia.
Fuck Russia. All right. I'm going to be James Lipton. Here we go.
Okay.
I'm here with Walter A. Not Walt Disney. Walter A. Walter, what is your favorite word?
My favorite word? Fuck.
What is your least favorite word?
Money.
What turns you on?
Well, a very, very beautiful piece of music. Or an incredible musician.
Is there one that comes to mind? A melody
over,
or a song?
Over the Rainbow is my favorite song of all time.
No shit.
Yeah.
That's a fucking good one. You know what mine is?
Yeah.
It's Not Easy Being Green by Kermit
the Frog. I love that. I used to play that every night.
For real?
It's not that easy being green.
Incredible.
Beautiful song.
I actually love the Ray Charles version they did on The Muppet Show.
Insane. Yeah.
Talk about songs that'll make me cry, especially because Jim Henson was a fucking god to me.
Oh, but my
that,
god.
That, is it Joe Raposo that wrote that song?
I'm not 100% sure, but the chord changes are insane.
They are, right?
So good.
I love to hear that from you about that song.
Oh my god, so it's a whole lesson in music in one song.
Wow, I love that. What turns you off?
Money.
What is your favorite curse word? I know fuck is your favorite word. How about this? Use fuck for the curse word. What's your favorite word, just in general?
Oh, well, in general, probably, gosh.
A word that makes you feel good or a word that you use a lot?
Pussy.
There it is. What sound or noise do you love?
What sound of noise?
What sound or noise do you love?
Oh, sound or noise. The sound or noise that I love is any noise or sound just turns me off. I don't know why. I just love silence.
Yeah. Okay.
Like, God, well, a nice engine, a car engine.
Is nice.
I love cars.
Gotcha. Okay. You know? Good answer.
Yeah.
What sound or noise do you hate?
Probably unnecessary dog barking.
Oh, yeah.
Because I have 5 dogs.
Yeah, that's right.
And they start barking.
At nothing.
Fuck, man.
Yeah, what can you do?
You know, I kick them.
What profession other than your own would you like to attempt?
Well, if I wasn't doing this, I probably would have loved to have been an attorney. Because I kind of like to argue and win arguments. Sure. So I would be like a litigator. So.
Yeah, the way that you... even just kind of tilt your head sometimes and have good, consistent eye contact, I can see how people eventually would go, fuck, you're right.
Yeah.
You're right. I did eat that piece of pizza, even though I saw it go into your mouth.
Yeah. No, but people, like right now we live in this completely insane, like how are you that? How do you not see the truth and that what you see is so wrong?
Yep.
You know? And that you could change somebody's opinion or you could change somebody's mind because what you think is true is it's completely not.
Yep.
You know, so.
What profession would you not like to do?
I probably would never want to be in the medical profession because of all the pain and suffering that those guys have to.
Too much to be around that.
Just
you
it's
can't
crazy.
Not take that home with you.
Yeah, when I was in the hospital, I mean, you know, we all know. I mean, there's so much bad that goes on in these places. You know, especially with COVID and very hard.
If heaven exists, what would you like to hear God say when you arrive at the pearly gates?
Oh, I would love for him to say that the two people most hated that I have in hatred for did not get to heaven. Don't worry, Walter. Those two motherfuckers are not here.
And then he goes, oh, and by the way, All I Want for Christmas is a great song. Still, we play it up here all the time.
Yeah, you know.
You fucking rule, dude.
Oh, thank you.
This was a real treat.
Yeah.
Was looking forward to it for a long time. You were very generous to adjust numerous times, and I owe you many dinners for that.
By the way, the many adjustments.
Yes.
Probably a record in my life.
The times
but,
I reached.
I was like, man, this guy is so busy.
Yeah. I appreciate you being so understanding. And for me with this stuff, it's like very important to where I don't like to feel rushed or, and especially with you, because I really truly was looking forward to having this.
Oh, good.
And there's certain times where things were proceeding or following that we're just going to make it not the only thing I'm thinking about. And I don't want that.
Yeah. Well, I told you before, I have such respect for you. I think you're a wonderful person.
Thanks, bro.
I know that just, you know, and I knew of you way before I met you. I've seen, you know, your movies and when I first saw your comedy, it was like, oh man, this guy is so, and then you really blew my mind the other night when we got to, you know, sing some songs and play some, and I go, man, this guy is so talented. So let's keep it going.
No shit, man. We really got to, I mean, a musical is not the worst idea. I'll add in a little clip here at the end of this footage of we were at the improv all hanging out. And then we went back in and convinced Walter to sit down and play. And then he started playing My Heart Will Go On. And I was like, I fucking love this song. And I would love to be able to sing with a guy who was a part of this tune. Oh, so that was a treat. So,
very honored. Thank you for having
love
me.
You, bud.
And thank you, sir.
Mo, did you enjoy it?
Yeah.
Loved it. Yeah, dude. Man. Are you on social media? Can people follow you anywhere?
Yeah, well, W-A-F-A-N-A-S-I-E-F-F at Wafanasieff, Instagram and Twitter.
We'll put that up on the screen.
Yeah, although, you know, it's just this whole TikTok bullshit that's going on.
I a lot of fun recipes on there.
I can't. Well, there's good recipes.
Yeah.
But, I mean, right now, like, all the music people are starting to get fed up because their labels are making them do TikTok posts, and it's like it's so unnecessary.
Yeah, you know? Like that's the part of this whole industry that is unsettling, where certain things happen and you're like, you got to do that, and it's like, it's why can't it be about the craft of what we're trying to do, and why is there like this other now, which, you know, double-edged sword to it, where it can, you know, you see some people taking advantage of that, but it's like you don't want to be consumed with that to where you're taken away from, you're trying to write a song, but then people are like, oh, did you get your TikTok in today, or did you, let's get a quick shot of you in the studio. But yeah, man, I don't know.
Yeah,
constantly.
I mean, some people, like, the only thing I do lately is because of my interest in politics, greatly interested in righting the wrongs, you know, the Ukraine war. Because I've been deeply associated with Russia and Russians. I speak Russian. I used to go there all the time. I've produced Russian artists. They've come here back and forth, so forth and so on. But what happened, you know, in February, it just shut it off, man.
Yeah.
That's never again, ever. That's never going to happen again. This country just closed up for the rest of the world again, and it'll never be known for anything but being the murder slaughterhouse.
Yeah, that's a wrap.
That's it. You know, no more McDonald's, Starbucks, everybody's out of there. It's, you know, it's closed forever.
So if you're Russian and you see Walt and you see him at Disneyland and you want to go up and say, hey, Mr. Disney, can I take a picture with you? Fucking keep on walking, baby. It's not happening.
It's not happening.
Good night, everybody.
It seems like everywhere we look, society is telling us what's beautiful, how to wear our hair, what size our body should be, how our self-worth is based on what we look like. We don't want our kids to inherit these harmful beauty standards, right? So what if we could help redefine beauty for the next generation? I'm Jess Wiener, cultural expert and host of Let's Change Beauty, a podcast powered by the Dove Self-Esteem Project. You can listen every week on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.